Welcome to Vet Talk with Royal Canin, where we address an array of topics relevant to veterinarians and veterinary clinics. I'm Brenda Andreessen, co-CEO at Stevens & Associates, and I'm your host for this conversation. Our topic today is the management of feline dental disease. We know cats are skilled at hiding health problems, and cat owners may not always recognize when their pet's suffering from a health issue, especially one that impacts their oral and their dental health. So beyond the ability to eat and get enough nutrients to sustain their overall health, dental disease can significantly impact a cat's well-being. Armed with the knowledge to identify and manage these elusive dental problems, join us as we explore the most common dental challenges encountered in feline practice and discuss strategies to support their health. Joining me today to explore some of these most common challenges and strategies, as we mentioned, are Royal Canin Scientific Communications veterinarian, Dr. Angela Hughes, and veterinary dentist and oral surgery specialist, Dr. Jennifer Altman. Thank you for spending time with us on Vet Talk.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for having us.
This is going to be a really fun and interesting conversation. Cats have obviously been in the news a lot lately, so much to the yay of all people who are cat people and who think it's long awaited. So let's start out by framing that issue. So Angela, if you would, talk with us about the scale and the impact of feline dental disease.
Yeah, I think many of us are probably aware that dental disease is a common problem in both our feline and canine patients. In fact, in a paper put out by Nemec and his colleagues, by 2 years of age, 70% of cats and 80% of dogs have some form of periodontal disease. So this is impacting a lot of our patients in practice and really is an area that we can have a significant impact, particularly because obviously it's not just causing bad breath and pain in the mouth, but can also impact other parts of the cat's body and lead to health issues elsewhere as well. And as you mentioned, cats are really great at hiding their pain and their clinical signs of illness. So this is an area where we want to pay particular attention to best support them. Look in their mouths, pay attention to it, draw clients' attention to it so that we can be proactive and less reactive.
Important to know. So Jennifer, what are the most common dental diseases that you see in your patients?
That's a good question, but an easy question to answer, because the most common diseases I see, and I think that most veterinarians see, is periodontal disease and tooth resorption in cats, both of which are quite painful, can cause significant issues both in the mouth, but also systemically in our feline patients. And they happen, you'll see tooth resorption and periodontal disease in almost all cats at some point.
So knowing how busy veterinary practice can get day in and day out, how can veterinarians improve their detection? And then obviously when you detect, then the diagnosis of some of these problems.
So I think that the first step to detecting the problem is looking for it. So performing a full oral exam on every single patient that is coming in, even just for a wellness exam, is really the most important thing that we can be doing, is just looking for the problem. Most owners of cats don't even think that cats need dental care or that they have dental problems, not only because cats are masters, as we've said before, of hiding these issues, but it's just not something that I think has been really driven into what is the whole part of cat ownership, is that we have to look at their mouth and take care of their mouth as well as other parts of their body. So the first step is really looking for it. Even if the owner doesn't necessarily have a concern, it doesn't mean that there's not a problem there. Once we look in the cat's mouth, then it's a matter of talking to the owner, showing them if we can. We all know our feline patients are not always the most cooperative, but we do the best that we can. and just talking about what then needs to be done, which generally the next step is, in almost all cases, they need to be put under anesthesia for a full anesthetized oral exam. And dental x-rays are going to be probably the next most helpful, other than just looking for the disease. The next thing is going to be dental x-rays in looking for the extent of the disease and helping determine our treatment plan.
So from the perspective of effective treatment, that sounds like that's kind of square one, where you begin to determine what actually is going on with the patient. So what are some instances where early detection can help either minimize or, you know, have a better outcome on the diagnosis.
With periodontal disease, the earlier we can detect the issue, the better. There are different stages of periodontal disease. It starts stage one is where we have gingivitis only, and then it goes all the way up to stage four where we have greater than 50% attachment loss. And in those cases, we have lost the battle and those teeth are, they need to be extracted. But if we can get to a patient that has stage one periodontal disease or even stage two, and we can start to intervene, that is going to significantly slow down the process of periodontal disease and can help prevent the loss of teeth later in life. I've had several patients where we've gotten to them very early and with diligent care, with diligent care on our part, not only our part, but also of the owners, we've been able to maintain their oral health. One of my personal favorites is, and I'm not making this up, his name is Thunderpaws Isaac. That's his full first name, Thunderpaws Isaac. And he's this big Maine Coon who, thankfully, the primary care vet, when this cat was very young, about a year of age, started to notice that this cat had significant gingivitis and sent the cat to me because he was like, this is a little young for this, but we do see it even in very young animals. And since then, the owner has been diligent about bringing him in for routine cleanings, x-rays. She does home care, including feeding a dental diet at home. And we have been seeing Thunderpaws Isaac for about 4 years now, and we have not had to extract any teeth on him.
So diligence and vigilance combined for a really great success story there for Thunderpaws Isaac.
Thunderpaws is doing great.
Well, you touched upon the idea of nutrition, obviously, too. And so obviously, we know nutrition plays a real role in managing feline dental disease. So Angela, are there specific nutrients that are more beneficial for a cat's dental health, both, you know, preventive, and then we can talk a little bit about, you know, treatment, how we accommodate for once they do have dental issues?
Absolutely. So one of the key features of many dental diets is some method of reducing plaque buildup and tartar buildup. In our feline dental diet, for example, we use a nutrient called sodium tripolyphosphate, which can chelate the calcium mineral in the mouth and prevent plaque from accumulating in the first place. It also has structural features such that the teeth have to penetrate into the kibble nugget itself. And that basically creates more of a brushing effect in order to break those kibble and break them down and chew them. So between those two features, that's really a mechanical means as well as a chemical means of preventing preventing the plaque and tartar buildup within the mouth, leading to the gingival disease. But as you said, you know, that's great if we catch something early and can intervene and clean the teeth before we start the diet, because the diet isn't going to decrease the accumulated plaque and tartar, but it will help prevent additional accumulation. So ideally start with a clean mouth and then put that patient that's, you know, predisposed to developing plaque and tartar on a dental diet to help with that. Now, I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Alterman in terms of how she would like to approach it once, you know, you've moved down the line and you have a more severe case. We may need to intervene with some slightly different nutritional approaches.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think that, you know, like you mentioned, the dental diets are great when we catch it early or with patients that we know are prone and they're still able to chew and chew their food appropriately. You know, we definitely have those patients that are more challenging once we get to the point where they're starting to lose teeth and they can't chew. And in those cases, as far as nutrition goes, especially immediately post-op, once we've taken the teeth, we want them to have really good nutrition because that's going to improve their ability to heal. And in some of these severe cases, they have a lot of healing to do. So we will use diets such as like the recovery diet. We have some patients that are even on feeding tubes post-op that recovery is great for. And the gastrointestinal diets can also help. And then, you know, we definitely have them on a soft food for the immediate post-op period. one of the biggest things I hear from owners is my cat's going to need to be on a soft food its entire life. And the answer is probably not. They can still eat kibble down the road. They just swallow it whole, but it does need to be a balanced nutritional diet, because they have shown in various human studies that poor nutrition can contribute to poor periodontal health. It's all very interconnected.
And I can imagine with some of those patients that you're dealing with that have really severe disease may even not be on a good nutritional plane coming in. So you're even dealing with a deficit on top of, you know, the recovery period. So those patients in particular could benefit from a complete and balanced liquid diet if that's what you need to use, or say a higher calorie, higher energy, higher calorie, higher energy gastrointestinal type diet that's easily digestible, and they can incorporate the nutrients and incorporate the calories so that they can better recover and then also close that deficit.
Yeah, I agree. Or the more calories we can pack into it in a small amount, the better, because these cats immediately post up. And, you know, again, the first few weeks, or I always tell owners the first few weeks are the roughest weeks. The more calories we can pack into it, the better, because, yeah, they come in this nutritional deficit and then they have all of this healing to do. But they also, you know, their mouth is not maybe feeling as great as they would want it to. And so they don't want to eat as much. So these really high calorie dense diets are clutch for these patients.
So let's talk a little bit about dental specialists. When is the right time, the best time? How do you know when it's time as a general practitioner to be talking to a veterinary specialist?
I think if there's anything that's out of the ordinary or just doesn't seem to fit, especially in cases where you have really young cats or that have advanced periodontal disease, or the inflammation seems like it's not just affecting the gingiva, those might be cases that you would want to talk to a veterinary specialist about or refer. If you have a question about referral and if it is the time to refer, always reach out to your veterinary dental specialist that you usually refer to. We are always happy to provide advice as far as, do they need to see us? Is there something that you can do? Just reach out.
This is such a great conversation, because there's an underestimation, I think, of the impact of dental disease and on overall health systems and that really critical role of nutrition. So it's really terrific to share all of this insight with people to get them thinking about that intersection of the two, maybe in a different way than some of our listeners have had before. So this could be such a broad and deep topic, right? Just barely scratched the surface here, but knowing that we only have a limited time for this podcast, you know, as we start to wrap this up a little bit, I would love to hear from each of you, your final thoughts on some resources and your recommendations for those listening to our podcast, where they can go to dig in a little bit further here.
Yeah, so I think that if you're interested in digging in a little bit further into dentistry for our feline, all of our veterinary patients as a whole, the American Veterinary Dental College, the AVDC at avdc.org, has a lot of really good resources, as well as a lot of listings for online continuing education. There is also, I always have to plug a little bit, the Veterinary Dental Forum every year. We do have a full conference where we cover everything you would want to know about veterinary dentistry. And it'll be in Palm Springs this year. So come join us there. But the AVDC is a good good resource. And also the Veterinary Oral Health Council, if you're looking for products that will help your patients with home care, the Veterinary Oral Health Council at vohc.org is a great resource for both veterinarians and owners to find products that'll help prevent plaque and tartar and help prevent periodontal disease.
Angela, you have additions to that list?
Well, I was just going to call out our Royal Canin Live continuing education platform where folks can come and join us for a variety of online CE opportunities, totally free. And in the month of February, we will be offering a couple of different talks on dentistry, including one with Dr. Alterman talking about feline chronic gingival stomatitis on February 6th. If you are unable to join us live for that presentation, it will be available on demand through our Royal Canin Live platform for about a month afterwards. So you're welcome to watch it at any time or watch it again and again, because I'm sure there's going to be lots of great nuggets that you can learn from there.
Some great resources available. Thank you, Dr. Jennifer Alterman and Dr. Angela Hughes, for sharing your insights with us today on Vet Talk. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
I was just going to throw in one little nugget as well, that the average pet owner, if things are going well, hopefully they aren't seeing their cat's mouth. So unlike dogs, they are less likely to lick and bite us, you know, for better or worse. So hopefully they don't get a lot of interaction with their cat's mouths on a normal basis.